National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
As All Hallows Eve, All Saints Day, and All Souls Day near, we take a deeper look at the dangerous cult of Santa Muerte, or Saint Death. But on a much lighter note, we welcome the new editor-in-chief of Catholic News Agency to talk about the growth of the news organization that is the latest addition to EWTN's growing news division. I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host for Register Radio.
And I'm Matthew Bunsen, the Register's senior editor. This show, we will look at the mounting dangers, as Jeanette said, being caused by a satanic cult disguised in the terminology of Catholic devotion, the cult of Santa Muerte, which can translate as Saint Death or even Holy Death. We're going to talk to Kathleen Knabb for all of the details.
But first, we're joined by J.D. Flynn. J.D., it's great to have you.
Hi, Jeanette. Hi, Matthew. Thanks so much for having me. I'm grateful.
So Catholic News Agency was founded in 2004. It's really a very direct response to Pope John Paul II's call for the new evangelization. And today, as a part of EWTN's news division, CNA is one of the fastest growing Catholic news providers in the world. J.D., you just started in this position, I don't know, was it six weeks ago?
Almost 2 months ago, so I haven't broken it yet.
Well, let's talk about this new beginning. You are changing over from a very different role. Let's talk about your background. You've been on these airwaves before as a canon lawyer and as really someone I turn to very often for a canon law perspective. What's the latest, the last thing that you were doing before turning to CNA?
Sure. So I started this job a little less than 2 months ago, and before that I was working for Bishop James Conley in the Diocese of Lincoln, Nebraska, kind of serving as a theological advisor, as a canonist, to help the bishop with special projects and with the administration of the diocese, and then helping to oversee some of our communications projects in the Diocese of Lincoln and then some of our pastoral ministries as well. Before that, I worked with you in the Archdiocese of Denver, where we had many happy years working, and as a canon lawyer and in other roles as well. And so this job, really, I've been so excited to get into it because it's such a neat opportunity to use some of that formation, the theological and canonical formation that I have, and also the experience that I have working in dioceses to help tell the church's story and to tell it well, and to give Catholics a Catholic lens, a lens of the church's teaching through which to view the news of the world and the news of the church.
You know, I having known you when you first started at the Archdiocese of Denver, I was working communications, you were working in the tribunal. I remember having conversations about Catholic communication, so you seem to have always been interested in that aspect of work. But what got you started writing? Because it's been a while now that you've actually been published in various Catholic news entities.
I've been writing for a while. Of course, a canon lawyer writes all the time, but the things that a canon lawyer writes professionally, nobody ever wants to read because he writes, you know, complicated legal briefs or long, boring legal briefs. So I've been writing for a broader audience and publishing for a few years. And really, the reason I started doing that is because of the witness of our former boss, of Archbishop Chaput, the impact that he's had on the church and on the lives of believers across this country and also across the whole world, largely because of how eloquently and clearly he proclaims the faith. It was really just an encouragement for me to try to offer something to the church in the same way, not nearly with the level of skill or depth or insight, but to try to just offer something. I mean, we're all called to be witnesses, and one way that I've tried to do that is just by writing something about the things that I know about.
Right, and you know, one of the things that you do know about is being a father of two children who you've written about before, and I think even the Register's pages that are Down syndrome children who have Down syndrome, and then another son very recently this summer. And they're such beautiful joys, and it's been awesome to see them in your writing. What have you learned as a father from having those two, first of all, two beautiful Down syndrome kids, and now this third son?
Sure. I'm glad you mentioned our baby, too, because I write a lot about Max and P, our children with Down syndrome, and I worry that he's going to get a complex, so I feel like I have to find something to write about him and soon. But we do. We're blessed. My wife and I are blessed with the three children, but two of them have Down syndrome, and they're adopted, and we didn't set out to adopt children with Down syndrome. They just kind of came into our lives through God's providence, and we've been just so blessed by them. Our spiritual lives have developed through our being able to be their parents, but also being able to know them and the witness of who they are. And so many people today haven't encountered someone with a disability.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have, they often haven't encountered someone with a disability in a Catholic context and with the Church's understanding of the dignity of all people and in many ways what we can learn from disabled people about our own weaknesses, our own crosses, and our own utter dependence on the Lord and His providence. So we've tried to give witness to that. You know, children with Down syndrome are so commonly now facing the eradication of abortion because of prenatal diagnoses.
Right.
And in other ways, you know, Pope Francis has talked very beautifully about the marginalization that disabled people face, especially the loneliness that disabled people face in a culture that is increasingly measuring human worth by the ability to produce. And so we've tried to, because we've had the blessing of the witness of our children and getting to know other disabled people through them, we've tried to find ways to share that, because it's been such a great blessing for us. And so I have written about them, especially, I've tried to write about them, especially, in terms of the great, just the great persecution that disabled people face.
Absolutely.
And most especially through abortion, but in other ways too.
That's absolutely right, and I'm so glad that we could talk about Pia and Max, and I'm sure there'll be plenty of time of talking about the newest addition to your family. But
there better be, or he's going to be mad.
So turning from the home life into the office, the public life that we now find you in, Catholic News Agency. It's a very big organization. I don't know that our listeners actually know how big the organization is, its relationship to ASI Prensa. So give us a little, introduction to the whole of Catholic News Agency.
Sure. Catholic News Agency is a group of news agencies in several languages around the world. So our large sister agency is ASI Prensa, Spanish language Catholic News Apostolate, ASI Stampa in Italian, CNA Deutsch, ASI Digital in Portuguese, and even now we're exploring the possibility of some other language apostolates. So this large group shares a common mission, which is to talk about and report on the news of the Church, the happenings of the Church, but also the happenings of the world from a Catholic perspective. So that as Catholics, as we live our daily lives and think through the issues of the day, we can do so with the richness and blessing of the Church's teaching. So we are the ASI group, us and our sister language agencies are a big group. At CNA, we have our headquarters is in Denver, and we also have a bureau in Washington, D.C., and a bureau in Rome, and some writers who are in other places as well. And so we try and report on the news, especially in the Church in the U.S., and things that are happening globally for Christians. We're also really learning now how to reach into a social media audience. Traditionally, our audience has been through a wire service. We're an editor service for a lot of diocesan newspapers, for the National Catholic Register,
right,
for other media apostolates. And so we provide news for other publications. But what's really grown for us over the last, especially the last 5 years, is our online presence, our social media presence. So we're on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and we're trying to learn the best ways to give the news from a Catholic perspective in those forums, and in ways that we can reach audiences who probably don't read a traditional diocesan newspaper or other kind of more traditional Catholic media apostolates.
Yeah, I know, JD, I know you provide an immense amount of material for the National Catholic Register, both in print and online. What are you finding as you've settled in, though, as editor-in-chief, the biggest challenges that you think lie ahead for any kind of Catholic news agency, especially one as international now as CNA?
There's so much. What I'm learning is just how much stratification there is in the way that people get any kind of news, but even Catholic news. It's becoming so very easy for all of us to live in a kind of the kind of echo chamber where our viewpoints are sort of mutually reinforced to us over and over again by the kind of news we consume, or the kind of magazines we consume, or literature even that we consume. And so we want to speak broadly from the heart of the Church and from the wisdom of the Church. And it's amazing just how difficult that is in an increasingly sort of polarized world. And for all of us, we can become very quickly, even without knowing it, because of the way that we consume content digitally, we can become very quickly sort of segregated into reading or hearing or listening to things only that sort of affirm what we've already read and heard and listened to.
Absolutely.
And so finding ways to reach people with the fullness of the gospel, which challenges all of us in one way or another, and to cover the news with the fullness of the gospel is I think, becoming ever more difficult.
Absolutely. You know, JD, you raise a point that I've been thinking about a lot lately. We've been preparing for the 90th anniversary of the Register, which will happen November 8th. And so as we've been preparing for this, I've been thinking of all my predecessors have prepared a print product, something that hopefully readers back then would read from end to end, you know. And so in doing so, they could provide a balance of material. Now we do provide a print product, but so much is online and so many people get their news from Twitter or Facebook that they could very easily look at one aspect of what we do and think that that's everything. You know, oh, the National
right.
Catholic Register, all they do this year is cover a Fatima, you know.
Right.
They're the Fatima newspaper. Well, that's hardly what we do, you know. So anyway, you've got such a, short period of time at CNA, but you're thinking about one of the deepest challenges that's out there for us. So I completely understand.
We have to figure out ways to address that together, because we're fighting, we're trying to get a message out. It's rocky soil for us because we're trying to do the news with the gospel in a world where there's profit to be made by sort of stratifying people and classifying them in a very narrow way. And so that's rocky soil. So I think we have to collaborate together on how to overcome that.
Absolutely. JD, we'll be doing a lot of collaboration. We didn't get a chance to talk about your recent trip back from Rome, and our show is near an end, but I know that you'll end up being a frequent guest on Register Radio, since CNA and the Register are partners in the same work, and you guys provide us with such great material. So I look very much forward to our continued collaboration. So thanks for being with us today.
Oh, thanks you both. I really appreciate it.
When we come back, we'll be joined by Register contributor Kathleen Knapp. We'll talk about the dangers of Santa Muerte. This is Register Radio on EWTN. More when we return.
Father Wade Menezes talks about the National Catholic Register.
As the National Catholic Register celebrates its 90th anniversary, I think that says a lot about the publication. It works. It's solidly Catholic. It presents the teachings of the Church, unabashedly so, and also guides its readers to be even more solidly Catholic themselves. One of the major effects that I think the Register has on its readers is that it elevates the intellect. Whether it be a faith item or a news item, it presents the news and the faith item in a very balanced way. One thing that the Register can never be accused of is being too far left or too far right. It is solidly Catholic, right in line with the Chair of Peter, and I think that says a lot about the Register.
For a 6-issue free trial of the National Catholic Register, go to ncregister.com and click on the 6 free issue banner, or call 800-421-3230 for your 6 free issues. And as you await your first issue, enjoy some of our online content.
let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
The cult of Santa Muerte is growing rapidly in Mexico and even in the United States. Here on Register Radio, to learn more about the dangers of this cult, we are joined by Kathleen Knabb, who just wrote a piece on Santa Muerte for the Register. And of course, I'm also joined by Matthew Bunsen, who's already been on the line, my co-host. So Kathleen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Kathleen, I'm not sure if everyone has heard about Santa Muerte, but probably most people have seen a picture that, or some kind of artwork that depicts her. Describe for us Santa Muerte.
Well, she is a really hideous looking thing. She is a skeleton who usually is depicted wearing sort of a robe and carrying a scythe in her hands, like she's out to harvest. So sort of a grim reaper sort of image. And you know, as you say that, Jeanette, that maybe most of us are familiar with seeing an image that we might think is Santa Muerte. That's probably true. Although I wonder if some people might just see the skulls that are associated with the Mexican celebration of All Souls Day and wonder if that's Santa Muerte. And those two things are actually very separate. So Santa Muerte is, she's a whole skeleton and she wears this robe and is carrying around this harvesting stick. And she's not very pleasant to look upon.
Right. So what is this so-called devotion to her?
Mm-hmm. Well, it is, I guess it is a devotion. I mean, it's a cult. So it's a satanic cult, as one of the bishops that I spoke to for the article was emphatic about. And basically what's happened here is people in Mexico, and I would say by and large, this is among the poor of Mexico, have erroneously taken Santa Muerte as another saint. Mm-hmm. So Santa Teresa, you know,
right.
Saint Agnes, and here is Santa Muerte as another saint. And there's a devotion to her that is similar to the devotions that you and I have, you know, or that they have to other saints, to other patrons and patronesses, or even to Our Lady of Guadalupe.
So you mentioned this bishop who made a statement about it, and of course, the Register first became interested in writing about this earlier this year. I think it was around February, and because there were some articles written about the bishop's statements on this, the bishops of Texas, in fact, and you're down in Texas. I think
right.
We contacted you. It might have been as early as March to talk with you about this and just put it as a story out there for you to work on, and so now we're kind of wrapping it up and timing it for All Saints Day, All Souls Day, and Halloween because of people's interest in these kind of things around this time. But what happened, I guess, back in February that caused the interest?
Right. Well, yeah. So I think what happened there, as far as I was able to ascertain, some bishops of northern Mexico and bishops of the southern United States have regular meetings. And so the theme of Santa Muerte came up in one of those meetings, and that's how the story started circulating in the press here. But as you say, at least one bishop of Texas, the Bishop of San Angelo, has made an official statement just informing the people of his diocese about what's going on here, you know, that it's a cult, that it's satanic, that this is not an actual saint, and there shouldn't be devotion to her as if she were another saint among the canonized saints. So that's not to say that Santa Muerte is some sort of a new devotion, because it's definitely been gaining ground a lot in Mexico, and it's very much associated with the narcotraficantes, so the people who are drug traffickers. And that's really, I think, how it has found its way north of the border and here into the United States. But it's certainly not something that you would have to be Mexican necessarily to fall prey to. What's going on here is that Santa Muerte is presented to people as someone who can provide favors for you, material favors.
Mm-hmm.
maybe help with the law if you're having issues with the law, if you've been involved with drug trafficking. And who knows? I mean, I don't know to what extent Satan involves himself in these kinds of practical matters. Maybe there is a way in which Santa Muerte, quote-unquote Santa Muerte, right, but actually Satan is gaining favors for people. But I think everyone can fall prey to the idea of, oh, this is a devotion for me to get some sort of a favor. And so that's what's making people particularly susceptible to this, especially if you're facing a lot of poverty. Then, you know, the idea of a devotion that can help you to pay your bills this month can be appealing.
Yeah, we think
so that's what's going on. Now, what's needed for that, of course, is a certain ignorance, is a certain lack of formation in your faith, because, you know, anybody who knows a little bit about what kind of profile a Catholic saint has and the canonization process, we quickly realize, of course, that Santa Muerte is not a saint.
Yeah, Kathleen, picking up on that, for the appeal of something like this, is this a purely Latin American phenomenon, or are you finding that it's growing more mainstream?
You know, I couldn't speak. I don't think it's mainstream per se in the United States, but at least it's enough of a concern that the bishops have wanted to speak out, particular bishops. I'm not saying, not the USCCB or anything. I mean, it hasn't been, you know, something that everyone across the country feels like they need to speak about. But, you know, here in South Texas, apparently it's come up enough that the bishops have wanted to speak out about it. And it might be just in practical things like being able to find a Santa Muerte candle mm-hmm. at the grocery store along with the St. Jude candle and the St. Thaddeus candle or something like that. Or what Bishop Sis mentioned to me is in prison ministry, sometimes the pastoral ministers are coming across it.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the Dia de los Muertos, mm-hmm. you know, the Day of the Dead. How are these two different? Because you mentioned that it's important for people to understand that they are.
Right. Yeah, Matthew. I think that's an important thing to understand because Santa Muerte is a terrible thing. I mean, it's a satanic cult, so it's something that as Catholics we want to avoid, you know, absolutely and 100%. But Dia de los Muertos is actually a really beautiful Catholic tradition, and just a way that Mexicans really celebrate All Souls Day. So there is generally a big push to go to cemeteries to visit the graves of the faithful. And then also in homes, they build these Dia de los Muertos altars. And it's really just a way for people to remember, you know, their deceased loved ones. And my husband, I lived in Mexico. My husband is from Mexico. And so we do one in our house. And my dad passed away a long time ago, a long time before my own kids were born. But I can definitely see how the annual Dia de los Muertos altar helps my kids to feel that closeness with their grandpa that they never met. Because, you know, it has his picture on it, it has certain things that he enjoyed doing and things like that. And so it's really an invitation for us to pray for our deceased and to remember these beautiful consolations that our faith offers us, you know, our faith in
Absolutely.
The communion of saints, our faith in the resurrection, our faith in heaven, and that when the faithful have died, they're not dead, they're alive, you know, in heaven. And so that's what a Dia de los Muertos altar is. And of course, oftentimes those are decorated with skulls, and not because it's a very Catholic symbol, right? I mean, if you look at Catholic art, you'll oftentimes see saints, particular saints, and specifically will almost always be depicted with a skull, because as Catholics, we need to, of course, remember that we're going to die and, you know, life is a pilgrimage and all of that.
Absolutely.
And so skulls are a part of the decoration of Dia de los Muertos altars, but those skulls are something very different than Santa Muerte.
Absolutely. This has been a very informative show, Kathleen. You told me that you had never done radio, but you're doing a wonderful job explaining this. Your reporting skills just come out as you talk about this. So,
Well, thank you, Jeanette. I guess I can say that this is a theme actually really close to my heart. Having lived in Mexico, there was a Santa Muerte shrine, if you want to call it that, just right down the road from my husband's parents' house. And so it is something that is widespread, and I do hope to be able to, add my voice to, you know, the desire to inform people and to make people aware of what's going on.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, I came across this myself as one year we were having a party. It was a kind of a Mexican celebration. I had just gotten back from Mexico and I wanted to cook some Mexican food for friends. And I bought, I bought decorations. And I do remember seeing the Santa Muerte candles in the grocery store, mm-hmm. in just a regular grocery store. And so I think it could be easy for someone to somehow just be attracted to these things and thinking that it's okay. And so it's very important for us to get the news out there. But also I love the opportunity to speak about the Day of the Dead and to speak about November, because in the U.S. we don't really celebrate so much the Day of the Dead. I mean, obviously there's All Souls Day where we attend Mass and we have a special opportunity to pray for our deceased loved ones. But the whole month of November is that opportunity. The whole month of November is an opportunity to pray for our loved ones who have gone before us.
Yes, definitely. I do think that's a richness that we can take from those who have immigrated to the United States. I know one time when we went to visit a cemetery in Mexico, the line that we had to walk, the parking was so far back because everyone goes to visit their dead on All Souls Day, on the Day of the Dead. And so I think that that's something that we can learn, a richness that we can, you know, take from our brothers and sisters who have come to this country from Mexico.
And that's a great witness. Thank you for joining us on Register Radio, and remember to pray for your loved ones during the month of November. Go to ncregister.com for more information on Santa Muerte and this dangerous cult. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Rich Jesse, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.